Welcome to Tori Mecha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Melachim Aleph Perek Tet, Melachim Chapter 9. In the previous perek, we read about Shlomo's tefillah at the dedication of the Mikdash, and all the ways that he hoped that the Mikdash will be part of Bnei Israel's lives through all the ups and downs. He begs Hashem that he should accept Bnei Israel's tefillot that they offer both in the Beit HaMikdash and in the direction of the Beit HaMikdash when they can't be there. Shlomo had asked in Perek Chet, in Chapter 8, Pasuk 29, Liyot encha pituchot el habayit hazel laila v'yom. Hashem, let your eyes be open to this house day and night. El makom asher amarta yishmi sham, to the place that you said my name will be there. Lishmoa el hatzfila asher palel avdecha el makom hazeh. You shall listen to the prayers of your servants who will be praying in this place. Perek Tet, chapter 9, now begins with Hashem's response to Shlomo. Shlomo now has a second revelation of Hashem to the same degree and in the same way that he had in Givon in Perek Gimel in chapter 3. Malvim notes that there was another revelation in the middle of the Mikdash, in the middle of the Mikdash story in chapter 6, but that wasn't on the same level as these two revelations of Hashem. Hashem responds to Shlomo, yes, but. In Pasuk Gimel, verse 3, we read, Vayom Hashem Elav, Shamati el Et tfilatcha ve'et techinatcha asher hitchananta lefanai. I heard your prayer and your supplication that you asked before me. Hikdashti et habayit hazeh asher banita lasum shmi sham ad olam. I have made this place kadosh. I have made it holy to place my name there forever. V'hayu einai v'libi sham kol hayamim. And my eyes and heart will be there all the days. And we hear Hashem reflecting Shlomo's language back to him. Shlomo had asked Hashem, please have your eyes on this place forever. And Hashem responds, yes, I will have my eyes and my heart on this place for all the days. But it's followed by a however in Pasuk Dalet in verse 4. Va'ata, says Hashem, and you, Shlomo, im teilech lefanai kasher halach David avicha bitam levav ubiyosher. If you follow me like your father David did, with a purity of heart and with righteousness in a straight path, lasot kechol asher tziviticha, and you do everything that I commanded you, chukai mishpatai tishmor, and you follow all of my laws, then everything will be good, and you, Shlomo, will have a lasting kingdom, just as I promised your father David that you would have. But that's conditional, and Im shov teshuvun in verse 6. If you change, atem uvnechem me'acharai, and you don't follow me, and you turn away from me, v'lo tishmeru mitzvotai v'chukotai asher natati lefnechem, and you don't keep my laws, v'alachtem v'avadatem elohim acharim mishtachvitem lahem, and you go and you serve other gods, and you bow down to them. Then it says verse 7, v'chrati et Yisrael me'al pnei adama asher natati lahem, v'et abayit asher ekdashti l'shmi eshlach me'al panai. Then I will cut you off from this land. I will kick you out of this land that I gave to you, and this house that I made holy according to my name, eshlach me'al panai, I will throw it away from my face. V'aya Yisrael l'mashal l'shnina b'chol ha'goyim. And Israel is going to be, they're going to be pushed out, they're going to be hated, they're going to be put down by all of the nations. And you just notice, Shlomo had mentioned the possibility of galut in the last perek, and he had asked that if Bnei Israel find themselves in the land of their enemies, Hashem should please continue to accept their prayers. But Hashem now tells him, there will be a reason for you being in Galut. That is a possibility. And the reason is because you stopped following my laws. He continues in verse 8, V'abayit hazeh ye elyon, kol ha'over elav yasim v'sarach, V'amru amel sa Hashem kacha la'aretz hazot v'labayit hazeh. Every people who see this house, they're going to reflect. They're going to say, why in the world did Hashem do this terrible thing to this land and to this house? How could it be that such a wonderful, exalted land and such a wonderful temple got destroyed? And other people will answer, Va'amru, he says in verse 9, Al asher azvu et Hashem Elohim, because they left Hashem their God, asher otzi et avotam me'eretz Mitzrayim, the one who took care of them, the one that took them out of Eretz Mitzrayim, ve'yachzeku be'elohim acherim ve'yishtachavu lahem, and they held on instead to other gods and they bowed down to them, v'yavdeim, they served them, al kain. Hevi Hashem aleim et kol hara'ah hazot. That's why Hashem brought these terrible things on them. This is part of Hashem's answer. that you'll only stay in this land and you'll only keep this Beit HaMikdash, and I will keep my eyes on it and I will keep my heart on it as long as you deserve it. And this is a really big if. This wasn't necessarily what we were expecting, but it's so crucial for understanding the Beit HaMikdash, and also just from Yirmiyahu's perspective, for understanding the path that eventually happened. Of course, here it's just a warning, but the warning is really important. And these two halves of Hashem's answer really parallel Parsha Bechukotai. You will get blessings if you're good, and curses if you're bad. Just like in Parsha Bechukotai, Moshe tells Bnei Israel that when they get into Eretz Israel, there'll be a peaceful time, and it will be wonderful only if it's earned. And now Hashem says the same thing to Shlomo. And here, actually, if you remember from last cycle, from Sefer Yirmiyahu, this passage actually echoes Hashem's revelation to Yirmiyahu in Parak 9. And this is from the Haftorah for Tisha B'Av that we read in Yirmiyahu chapter 9, verse 11. Mi ha-chacham v'yavena tzot v'asher diber pi Hashem elav v'yagida alma avda ha'aretz. Who can understand that Hashem can speak to him? Who would know? Why has the land been lost? Nitzata k'midbar mibli over. Why is it empty? Like a desert with nobody passing through. And people wonder, they don't understand. And Hashem responds, Vayomer Hashem, in Pasuk Yud Bet, Alas Vamet Torati, Asher Natati Lifnehem, Velo Shamu Bekoli, Velo Hochuba, because you left my Torah, and you didn't listen to it, and you didn't follow in my ways. So that ends up being the end of the story. But right now, everything is in potential, and we can also fulfill the good part, that Hashem's eyes and heart will be with this Beit HaMikdash forever, if you follow my laws. And Hashem was reminding the people that while now they have a more permanent place to encounter Hashem than they did before, it actually isn't permanent. The Beit HaMikdash is only going to be a reflection of their deeds. That's the first half of the parak. The second half of the parak continues with five more points. Point number one is about Shlomo and Chiram. Chiram, the king of Tzur, gave Shlomo lots of wood and gold and silver, and in exchange, Shlomo gave Chiram 10 cities of the Galil. Chiram goes down to inspect the cities and is extremely disappointed when he saw them, as they were marshy and not at all what he was expecting. Shlomo then gave Chiram 120 kikar of gold, perhaps to make up for his disappointment with these cities. And according to the Dat Mikra, each kikar of gold is about 30 kilo of gold. So it's a tremendous amount of gold. Point number two is that we get details of the tax system that Shlomo used to build the Beit HaMikdash and his palace, but also other cities, such as Megiddo and Gezer. And one of the ways that Shlomo was able to build up these cities and just create these tremendous building projects in his country was that he took the people who were from the seven nations, those Zion Amamim, that the Jews were supposed to conquer in the time of Yahushua, but really they never did. And there were still people from those nations, the Kanani, the Chivi, the Chiti, the Prizi, etc., living in Eretz Israel, and Shlomo wanted to deal with them. So he took them and he made them into a mas oved, an unpaid worker. And it's just really interesting how Shlomo deals with that, because remember, he is not a person of war, so he's not going to go to war against them, but he finds a way to almost push them out without going to war. One of the cities, just as a side point, that Shlomo captured, that Shlomo built up, was the city of Gezer. And Gezer was a Canaanite city, and the Pasuk tells us that it was actually captured by Paro, that Paro came up with his army. It was a very strong city, and Paro captured it, burnt it to the ground, and then sent it to his daughter, Bat Paro, as a dowry. And that's one of the cities that Shlomo builds up, probably in the honor of Bat Paro. Shlomo also builds up storage cities and cities for his chariots and horsemen throughout the whole country using these workers. And the word that we have for storage cities is arei miskenot. And the only other time that we had this word, or the previous time, it's a very unusual word in Tanakh, are the storage cities that the Jews built for Paro in Mitzrayim. So it's just so interesting now, like the full circle, that Paro helps them capture a city in Eretz Israel, and Shlomo is building storage cities for his own goods in Eretz Israel. Just, it tells you the whole cycle, the whole story has come to a really interesting conclusion. Now Bnei Israel are so powerful, almost like the Mitzrim were. And it's Shlomo who's enslaving these Zion Amamim instead of killing them. Pasuk Kaf Dalid, verse 24, tells us about Bat Paro's new house. Shlomo builds a new house. This is the third point in the parak. And the pasuk reads, Ach Bat Paro alta mi'ir David el beta asher banala. Bat Paro now goes up from Ir David, from the city of David, which was really where the administration was, the king's palace was, and she goes up to a new palace that Shlomo had built for her in the area. Az bana et ha-milo, and that is when Shlomo builds the milo. Now, it's very unclear what the milo actually is, and all the Mefarshim explain that these two statements are connected, that the milo was built because of Bat Paro's new house. And the Mefarshim explained that it was an area next to Bat Paro's house, and Shlomo built it up for her comfort. And this would make it different than the other things he built. The cities throughout the country and all of the different building projects, and of course the Beit HaMikdash and the Beit HaMelech, are all things that were built for the strength of the country and for the glorification of the country. But the Milo itself was built really just for Bat Paro. So what is the Milo? So the Milo comes up when it talks about David is, it says, Vayeshav David b'metzuda, Vayikra la'ir David. This is just when David moves into Yerushalayim after he captures it, and he calls it Ir David. Vayeven David saviv min hamilo ubaita. And it says, David built up the city from the milo and then inward. So it seems to be an area that's kind of on the outside of Jerusalem, but adjacent to the wall. And Malbim explains that this was actually an empty space that was between her palace, and it was right next to the wall of the city. And Shlomo built it up. That's why it's called Milo, that it was built up for a privacy for Bat Paro, so like people wouldn't come right next to her palace, and also to give her more of a living quarter for her servants. And just to point out that the Milo is going to be a very important place later on in our story, as not everyone is happy with this move that Shlomo did. The next point that we have in this parak is Shlomo's own worship in the Beit HaMikdash. In Pasuk Kav Hei, verse 25, Ve'ala Shlomo shalosh pa'amim bashana olot ushlamim al ha-mizbeach asher bana la-Hashem v'hiktir oto asher lifnei Hashem v'shilim et ha-bayit. 3 times a year, and we know this is referring to the Shalosh Regalim, the Shlomo would go and he would bring korbanot, obviously not himself, but through the Kohanim and the Ketoret. And he really was dedicated to the Beit HaMikdash. And this was the Shilim HaTabayit. This was the completion of the house. It wasn't that the house was completed once it was built, but rather the house was completed once it was used. The last story that we have in this parak is again about Shlomo and Chiram. Shlomo and Chiram make a joint venture in Etzion Gaver, which is close to Eilat. And they build a fortress there, as well as ports, to send ships to Ophir and bring back a tremendous amount of gold. Shlomo's country really did not have its own fleet of ships, and they were not expert shipbuilders. And this could be that because they had very little water access. Most of the coastline was still controlled by the Plishtim. And Chiram, on the other hand, lived in Sur, and that was on the Mediterranean. So Chiram sends workers down to Etzion Gaver to instruct Shlomo's workers in shipbuilding and sailing, and the venture is very successful, and they reach all the way down to Ophir. Zatmikra explains that the archaeologists disagree what exactly Ophir is, and it could be as far as Somalia or India. They bring back 420 kikar of gold, which would be, according to, if each kikar is 30 kilos, so that would be about 12,600 kilo of gold from this venture. Now, just to kind of look at this parak as a whole, the parak starts off with a revelation, an answer by Hashem to Shlomo's request of the previous parak. Shlomo asks Hashem, will you have your eyes on the Beit HaMikdash constantly? Hashem responds to Shlomo, yes, if you continue to earn it. In the rest of the parak, we see Shlomo really invested in the welfare of the country. We see him actively engaged in international relations, both with Chiram and with Paro, and by proxy of Paro's daughter. We see Shlomo engaged in domestic policies in his interaction with the people of the seven nations who live within his border, so more of a domestic policy. And he's getting more and more involved in the world and in expansionism, even creating a fleet to travel all the way down deep into Africa to discover gold. Some, like Professor Yehuda Kiel, see this parak as Shlomo fulfilling what Hashem wants of him. Even as he is expanding and solidifying his connection with other countries, he still makes sure to keep his priorities in order. As it says in Pasuk Kaf Hei, Ve'ala Shlomo shalosh pa'amim bashana olot ushlamim ala mizbeach asher bana la'Hashem. Shlomo, despite the fact that his head is in a million places, despite the fact that he's off to Africa and he's dealing with Chiram and he's dealing with Paro, he still always goes to the Beit HaMikdash 3 times a year and more than that, obviously, to be dedicated, and he dedicates himself to Hashem. Others, like Rav Benny Lau, see this parak as Shlomo slowly becoming so involved with his expansionism that he is becoming disconnected from the people, especially as is shown by using so many workers to build Bat Paro's palace and filling in the Milo, something that the pasuk points out that his father David specifically did not do. And if you take this opinion, then the terrible irony is that all of his expansionism and all of his wealth was ultimately for the good of his people. And they did benefit tremendously from living at a time period of no wars and tremendous prosperity. But the perception on the part of the people, and it could have been reflected in actuality, is that Shlomo is distant from them. Not his closest, not what he means to do for them, but the way they perceive him as not part of them anymore, as being so involved in the world that he's not, that he's changing almost. And this parak seems to show either way an example of a king who can be successful in the world and still follow Hashem. The question before us are there limits, or does at some point one preclude the other? Thank you for studying together, Li'in Lo Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.